What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be recapping the eighth straight loss for this Wizards team. This one, a 138 to 118 loss to the New Orleans Pelicans. A lot of good came out of this. Trae Young was really good, 17 points, 8 assists, a lot of really creative passes, and really showcased, how great his court vision is. Trey Johnson with another really good game, which is really welcome considering he had struggled mightily in those 9 games since returning from an ankle sprain. He had 20, Will Riley added 19. You saw a lot of good. There were also some bad. Bilal Coulibaly really struggled to make a shot, especially when the Pelicans dared him to shoot, couldn't make anything really until the last couple minutes of the game. And then obviously you had Alex Saar returning from a 10-game absence from that right hamstring strain. He had some good moments. He had some moments where you're like, okay, he's shaking off some rust. But overall, a good game and a good result for the Wizards, who competed for 3 quarters and in the fourth kind of fell apart. And that's exactly what you're looking for, when you're trying to define like great quality tanking loss. But especially considering the opponent, New Orleans, is sort of in that bottom five, bottom six alongside Washington. The further you can get away from them, the further you can move into territory of, okay, we feel comfortable that we're going to be able to guarantee we keep our pick. And that's where the Wizards are, and we're going to be here, as always, to break it down. And I want to start with sort of a game recap, and I'll sort of walk you through the game. And as I do, I'll try to plug in some holes and sort of explain some of the things that I saw. To start the game, you had Trae Young make a pair of 30-foot threes like it was nothing. Again, that's the range. It was nice to see him start hot from three, considering he was just 1 of 5 in his first game as a Wizard, missed his first 3 attempts, but good looks as well. And he turned around tonight and he goes 3 of 3 in the first half from distance, which was really welcome sight. Makes his first two, then gets to the lane for a contested layup. That's 8 quick points in about 4 minutes for Trae. And he added 3 assists too. And one of them was to Alex Saar down low. Really good entry feed. For Alex's first points back since February 8th, you'll see a lot more of that duo as they develop more chemistry. It's another reason I'm excited that Trae is playing now and he can hopefully develop that chemistry. That was 1 of 2 entry passes to Saar, so that was nice to see them sort of work in that two-man game. But the other two to start the game from Trae Young were assists to Trae Johnson, his fellow backcourt mate, and that's something else that you're going to start to see where Trae Young is spoon-feeding shooters like Trae Johnson for open looks, shots that they weren't getting with some of the point guard play that you had seen the first 50 or so games this year. They're getting now with Trae Young. One of those was a routine, just pass from the wing to the top of the key, and Trae Johnson drilled the top of the key, triple. But the other one was a real showcase of what Trae Young brings to this team, where he drove right, got in the air, and attracted 2 or 3 defenders that were just staring at him, creeping in. Because they didn't want him to get to the lane to break down the defense. And in doing so, he got Trae Johnson's man to cheat inside the paint, which again opened up a passing lane to Trae Johnson, who knocked down the wide open three. And for most teams, like if you watch the Pistons, that's not crazy to you. Like you have Cade Cunningham, who can break down a defense like that. And the Knicks, Jalen Brunson. Like there are teams that I wouldn't say take it for granted, but that's not a crazy play. Plays like that have been few and far between this season for the Wizards and even the last couple years with Poole at point guard, because you had Poole who would do that on occasion but was really a score-first mindset. And then this year, CJ McCollum played some point guard, but like Poole, when he breaks down the defense and gets into the paint, it's so he can hit a floater or get to the rim. It's not really to break down a defense with the intention of finding open teammates. And Bob Carrington played some point guard. But as we all know, he obviously has shown an inability at this point in his career to get 2 feet in the paint, let alone break down a defense. So when Trae Young does it so routinely, yes, Wizards fans have every right to be excited about a play where Trae Young drives into the paint and kicks it to an open shooter for three. Like I'm sure a year down the line, you'll be like, oh yeah, that happened. That happens all the time. But at least from watching it now, just 2 games in, the amount of times that you've seen Trae do that is awesome, considering how poor the point guard play had been for this team, this organization for years. They finally have someone in there, and any time that Trae is in, he's able to sort of step in and solidify the offense, kind of calm everyone down. The ball is in my hands, and I'm going to find an open shot for me or my teammates. And that's something that the Wizards have lacked. It's the reason they've been bad and their offense has struggled as a result. But it seems like now they have that point guard just 2 games in, but you're already starting to see that move pay dividends in terms of settling that offense down and running a much smoother and cleaner offense. And then you have Trey Johnson who knocks down both of those threes. And I'll say this, it's no coincidence that Trey Johnson has had his 2 best games since the All-Star break with Trae Young in the lineup. In the 9 games before Trae Young returned, Trey Johnson was shooting just 21% from three and sub 40% from the field. And in the 2 games playing alongside Trae Young, Trae Johnson is 9 of 16 from three. He's averaging 17.5 points in those 2 games. He was 5 of 9 against Utah from deep, and against the Pelicans tonight, finished 4 of 7, 20 points, 15 points against Utah. It's not a coincidence. Like, yes, it's a small sample size in 2 games, but when a player is struggling so much from outside, like Trey Johnson was, and then just 2 games with this new point guard, and it's all solved. Like he hadn't struggled, and he's just back to where he was. Like, clearly, you saw without CJ, with no real point guard, Trey Johnson struggled. Like, he's a rookie. He's not gonna be able to create all of these shots, all of these triples for himself. But now Trae Young comes in, and like I mentioned, it's no surprise that duo was sort of forming and how good they've been together. And again, Trae Johnson, 20 points, 7 of 13 from the field, 4 boards, 4 of 7 from three. Really cool to see him get back on stride. But again, that's a lot in part to having a real point guard in Trae Young as well. Will Riley was also awesome. There's a couple plays I want to talk about that Will Riley made tonight. Finished with 19 points on 8 of 12 from the field. So again, another efficient night. Didn't even make a three. All of his points were at the line or in the paint, and that's awesome. He had a play in the first quarter, I believe, in the first half, where he had Derrick Queen switched onto him, kind of sized him up a little bit, and then drove right to the block, and Derrick Queen sort of overran it because, again, not quick enough, not athletic enough to stick with Will. And Will just stops on a dime, pivots, and turns and hits a nice fadeaway jumper. Nothing but net. Like, that's a play that DeMar DeRozan makes, and you're like, yeah, he can do that in his sleep. But that's not the same reaction you should have for a 20-year-old rookie who's making that play pretty routinely. It's not the first time he's done that. They need a play in the fourth where Juju Watkins sort of threw him a pass in the middle of the paint, a bit far ahead. So in one motion with the defender coming in to poke the ball away, Will caught it and spun past that defender and made a layup. All in one motion. Like his pivot, his footwork is just immaculate for a player this young, this inexperienced. And you can just see the maturity, the growth, and development in his game from game one to now, where, this isn't crazy, him scoring 19 points. Like he's done this on a consistent basis since the All-Star break. So it's one thing to have your top six pick in Trae Johnson do what he did tonight and last night. It's a whole nother thing for the guy you picked 21 to be doing it on honestly a little bit more of a consistent basis post All-Star break. And both of those guys were phenomenal tonight. Really like what I saw from both of them, Trae Young as well. So those were the three guys that I thought played well. But again, the Pelicans had a 12-0 run in the first half to sort of flip it from a small Wizards lead to a 5-point lead for them. Entered halftime up 2 on the Wizards and then entered the fourth up 9. So like the Wizards were competing and they were pretty close until Trae Young got taken out and Alex Saar got taken out, both on about 16 to 20 minutes restriction. So once they got taken out in the third, you knew they weren't coming back into the game for the fourth. And from that point on, the Wizards sort of got blitzed. You blinked your eye, and it was from a 9-point deficit to a 20-point deficit halfway through the fourth, and pretty much wraps from that point on. But again, no one is complaining in Wizards world because it's one thing to lose these games. It's another thing to lose them against other tanking teams that are near you in the tank standings. And so that's 8 straight losses for the Wizards, but the last two have been the biggest because the first was to the Utah Jazz and the second was to the New Orleans Pelicans. Both of those teams own the fifth and sixth worst records in the league. And now they're sort of, separating themselves from Washington when you look at the tank standings. And I know I typically end on the tank standings, But there's a couple things I want to mention, and while we're talking about it, I feel like I might as well get to it. All right, the Washington Wizards are now 16-47. They are tied for the third worst record with the Brooklyn Nets, who again somehow beat the Pistons the other night. So they're pretty firmly in that bottom four. They now have a 2.5-game lead on the Utah Jazz, who own the NBA's fifth worst record, and a full 3.5-game lead on the New Orleans Pelicans, who have the sixth worst record, basically tied with the Dallas Mavericks, who also have 21 wins. So Washington is so firmly in that bottom four right now. Again, nothing is guaranteed, right? But from where they stand now to where you looked at them concerningly a couple of games ago when they swept the Pacers in that two-game homestand, it's obviously a much better outlook, a much better look for the Wizards, considering, again, Indiana at 15 wins and Sacramento at 14 wins have to play on Tuesday. So no matter what that result is, it's going to be a good one for Washington. And so they're looking pretty good. It's just 16 wins. Again, I like to look at this from a wins perspective because not every team has played the same amount of games. They have three less wins than the Utah Jazz and five less wins than the Pelicans. And a lot of these teams have to play each other as well. So they're going to continue to stack wins. And I'll say this pretty confidently. I would be shocked if the Wizards got more than 21 wins. I would. And I'll explain why. If you look on Tankathon right now, and I've loved this strength of schedule tool on Tankathon, the Washington Wizards, after playing the Utah Jazz and the Pelicans, have 19 games remaining. In those 19 games, they own the NBA's hardest remaining strength of schedule, which typically, down the stretch of a season, is a death sentence. And a team would be like, this sucks. We have a gauntlet. But the Wizards have an 8-game gauntlet coming up, a 19-game gauntlet realistically, and that's music to their ears because they're tanking and they have a top 8 pick they want to protect. But more importantly, they want to be the worst team possible. They don't want to be able to fall past the fifth or sixth pick. And the schedule they have is the best case scenario. It's the hardest in the league. And to me, they only have four what I would call winnable games of those 19. They have a game at the Brooklyn Nets. They have a game at the Utah Jazz, and they have two home games against the Chicago Bulls. Again, those are the only teams that they play of the final 19 games that aren't either in a playoff spot or a play-in spot. And that means that those other 15 games, like those teams are going to be playing and like trying really hard to win. And the Wizards are going to be doing the opposite. And so maybe they win one of those games, maybe. But I wouldn't be surprised if they lose all of those. And that brings you to 15 more losses and then four games that you could win, you could lose. And so let's say they win all of those winnable games and they lose the games that they should lose. That only puts them at 20 wins, which, as it stands right now, is good enough to ensure that they are at least a bottom five team. And if that's the case, and Utah somehow jumps them, that means that Utah would have to win just one game or two games over the last 20, which would be pretty impressive in terms of their tank. But again, not the most likely scenario. And even if that happens, that still gives Washington a 99.4% chance of keeping their pick if they finish with the fifth worst record. And again, if they're bottom four, then they guarantee they keep their pick. And so they're in a really, 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 really good spot right now. Obviously, they could have it their way. They would be worse than Sacramento. They'd be the worst team in the league, but you can't lose games for other teams. You can only lose your own games, and that's what they've done so far. Excuse me. And so obviously, like I wanted to lay out here, Washington isn't in this, okay, like they're gonna guarantee they keep their pick, but I will say this. This is probably the best I felt about them keeping their pick probably since December, like since before they went on that 7-5 stretch, where they played incredible basketball and won a lot of games they probably people didn't think they would win. Like this is the best that I feel and that I think Wizards fans should feel about the Wizards keeping their pick and honestly, maybe even pushing teams like Indiana and Sacramento for the league's worst record. Because if you look at their schedules, Indiana has a pretty hard remaining schedule. They have the eighth hardest remaining schedule. But they still got to play Sacramento once, Brooklyn once, Chicago, Milwaukee, Portland. Like they have some winnable games on there as well. And even if they don't win, those are games that the other teams will probably win as well. And then you look at some of the teams around them. Sacramento has the 27th easy, or sorry, the 27th hardest remaining schedule, so the fourth easiest remaining schedule in the league. They still got two games against Brooklyn. They still got to play the Pacers. They got to play the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Bulls. And Brooklyn has the sixth easiest remaining schedule. They have two more against Sacramento. They have Indiana. They have Memphis, Washington. So while the Wizards are, they have one more win than Indiana. They're tied with Brooklyn. They have two more wins than Sacramento. They're going to do what they can to tank, and the teams around them are going to have a lot more easy winnable games than them. And so I think they're in a really good spot in terms of the tank, and the losses to Utah and New Orleans only further strengthen my stance on that. So definitely wanted to discuss that part of the tank. And throughout this episode, we touched on Trae Young, who I thought was really good. 17 points, 8 assists, 4 boards, 3 of 5 from 3. Thought he was great. Again, minutes restriction, didn't play the final 18 minutes of this game, which is fine by me. Alex Saar had his moments, right? We talked about a lot of the good. Let's talk about a little bit of the iffy, I guess. I wouldn't say it's bad, but Alex Saar played his first game in a month. February 8th was his last game, so I guess a month to the day since Saar last played against the Miami Heat. He had some good. He obviously had a couple of layups, courtesy of Trae Young. Finished 3 of 7 from three. He had a 28 to 30 foot three, just like stepped in, nothing but net, which was really impressive. Had a block in there as well. Obviously shook off some rust. He had a floater on the baseline about 15 feet that he airballed, wasn't even close. And then he had another three from the far wing that he airballed as well. And you saw Trae Young miss a couple of shots. He typically makes free throws as well, which is sort of a sign of, yeah, I haven't played in a while, and I'm going to shake off some rust. And I thought Alex Saar did that a couple of times tonight. And he'll start to find his rhythm, played just 18 minutes. But was nice to see him back on the floor. I didn't think he would return this year, just based on how vague they were being with the injury updates. Just he's still week to week. He's still week to week for an injury that probably took a little longer than the timeline they originally provided. But he returned, and again, 19 games left. I would assume he plays a decent bit of them. And like Trey Johnson's still on this minutes restriction, and this I believe was his 11th game back from injury. So I would expect Trae Young and Alex Saar to remain on those minutes restrictions for the foreseeable future. So you're probably going to be getting about 18 to 20 minutes from all of those guys in your starting five. But obviously, Alex will start to shake off some rust. And again, no concern with anything that I saw from him tonight. Was just excited to see him and back on the floor. It had been a while since they've had some sort of semblance of rim protection. But now we can get to the bad, which was Bilal Coulibaly. And again, I'd applauded Bilal on previous episodes for his play, because he has had really good, solid games. He played really well against the Utah Jazz at 17 points on 7 of 10 from the field. But the game before that, he was really bad, missed all 6 of his threes against the Orlando Magic, was just 3 of 12 in that game. But the game before that, he was awesome. 23 points season high on 9 of 16 from the field against Houston. The game before that, he was all right. 14 points on 6 of 10 from the field against the Toronto Raptors. And so you're seeing it. It's like you thought maybe 3 out of 4 games Bilal played well, that you would see some sort of consistency, shooting the ball, being efficient on offense as well. But tonight was just a complete decline, a complete just really bad game from Bilal. Same looks he had gotten, same open looks from three, but couldn't make any of them. And the Pelicans dared him to shoot. It's the same thing the Hornets did when they dared him to shoot, and then he turned around and dropped, I think, like 13 or 15 points in the first quarter against them. But again, tonight, it was like the same coverage where the Pelicans just dared him to shoot. The difference was he couldn't make it. I think he started, he missed his first 7 threes in this one, or I guess missed his first 6 before making one really late. Missed his first 11 total shots, which is insane. He finished 1 of 12, 1 of 7 from the field. Just 5 points. Again, like it's tough with Bilal, because there's games like the one where he had 23 where you're like, I can see the vision. Like I can see exactly why some Wizards fans and even the Wizards front office maybe is bullish on Bilal and his development. And I can also see games like the Orlando game, games like tonight, where fans are just out and they're like, you can only have potential for so long before it gets to the point where it's like, all right, the rubber needs to meet the road. Like, you need to show me something on a consistent basis, especially when you're in a contract extension year. I think he'll get it. I think he showed enough over his first three seasons, even this season where he's battled injury, to where, well, Dawkins will give him some sort of deal. But I said even after that 23-point showing that while I think he's in a good position to get paid, he's also in a position to where he determines that. His play over the last 20 or so games will determine how lucrative that extension is. Because I think he'll get it. I think that the Wizards will give it to him. They gave one to Denny. They gave one to Corey. They want to be proactive, seems, in giving these extensions out. I think Bilal will get one. I'm very confident in that. How much he gets, how lucrative that is all up to him. And he hasn't done it on a consistent enough basis where I'm like, okay, I think the Wizards will give him 90 million or 100 million. If he had played like he did against Utah or against Houston for a big stretch to close the season, 4 years, 100 million, that's easy. But then you have games like Orlando, games like tonight, where you're like, 4 years, 60 million, 4 years, 70 million, you know, and that kind of makes more sense when it's, you know, it's been as inconsistent from below, from an offensive production standpoint as it has been this year. So again, he was really bad tonight. He has been good in past games. He has also been bad in past games. It's a little too inconsistent for my liking, but there's a long way to go. There's 19 games left. At this point in his first two seasons, I believe Bilal had already been ruled out for the rest of the season, with season-ending injuries. So at least, you know, he's battled injury, but he's healthy at this point in the season for the first time in his career. You know, it'll be cool to see, like, can he ascend in these final months? March and April basketball, as Wizards fans know, is a lot different from the other months. Like, there's a lot of guys that pop in these late season games because they're getting more playing time, more experience. The team's not trying to win and it's getting towards the finish line, and certain guys just have incredible games and incredible stretches. Like, maybe this is the point where Bilal can sort of, you know, say, hey, like, I've been inconsistent, but here's my offense and this is why I should get paid. Tonight does not help him in the slightest with those contract, you know, negotiations. But nonetheless, again, he was pretty bad tonight. Another thing I wanted to touch on, Justin Champagny received another DNP coach's decision. Didn't play a second in tonight's game. It's the second game in a row that that has happened. Did not play a second in the game against the Jazz. And I mentioned for about 2 minutes on that episode, it's actually a compliment to Champagny, I think, because they're like, hey, you're a little too good. We want to lose these games really badly. It's okay. Maybe you can return when we play a team like the Knicks or the Thunder. But we want to lose games, and these are big games we want to lose, and we're not even going to risk it by playing you. And they started Leaky Black. Like, Champagne would typically, I think, start in that starting forward spot, but he has in the last two games. They give it to Leaky Black, who, by the way, has shown that he really greatly improved his jumper. Was never considered a guy who could really make or knock down the three on a consistent level. And the last couple games when he's starting, I think he's done that, you know. But he started, played 30 minutes tonight. Champagne, he didn't play at all. Again, it's another example of, like, you understand what this team is doing. I got a lot of people ask me, like, why? I posted about it, and the main comment was, like, why, Greg, is he not playing? You guys know why. Like, I don't need to, I don't think I need to explain why. I think you guys know. I think the whole league knows. Like, in no way, if the Wizards are trying to win games, are they not only benching Justin Champagne, one of their most productive players this year, but doing so to play Leaky Black 30 minutes, who they just signed to a two-way spot, to play Anthony Gill 22 minutes, who play the same position sort of as him, to give out 21 minutes to Jaden Hardy. Justin Champagne's better than all of those guys. Justin Champagne is a top five player on this team right now, and he's not playing the last two games against tanking teams. Like, it's not shocking, and it's also not rocket science to figure out why he didn't play. It's not like, oh, he's in the doghouse. He's actually in the opposite of the doghouse. He's in the house where you can't play because you might get hurt, or we don't want you to play because we might win the game, basically. That's the house that Justin's in. That's a better house than the doghouse. But both result in him not playing. So I think maybe, he'll maybe play the next 8 games and then just if he doesn't play, and I'll say this, if Justin returns to the lineup for the next 8 games in this gauntlet that I'll talk to you about in a second, and then he doesn't play against Utah in that 9th game, then we actually like I'm actually we're correct in the fact that he's just not playing these games because he's too good and the Wizards want to lose against tanking teams. Because it's a theme when it's 2 times in a row against 2 teams that you're right next to in the tank standings. But he didn't play. Apart from that, you got 10 points from Jaden Hardy, 9 from Bub. Pretty quiet nights for them. Sharif Cooper only 10 minutes, which was interesting. Julian Reese, 26 minutes, 5 points, 9 boards. Continued to be really active on the glass. Not the 18-point, 20-rebound game he had last time, but he had 9 rebounds, 4 of which were offensive, so still good activity on the glass. But again, I think I've kind of gotten to everything I wanted to touch on realistically in this episode. Another really good loss for the Wizards, who have lost 8 in a row, fallen to 16-47, tied for the third worst record, and they're about to go on an incredibly difficult stretch where I would be surprised if they won any of these games. They are at Miami on Tuesday, at Orlando, and then at Boston. They then return home for 3 games against Golden State and then 2 against Detroit. And then they're home against Oklahoma City, so I guess 4 games at home before hitting the road to face the New York Knicks. That's 8 games against teams in the East that are in the playoff slash play-in conversation. Boston, Detroit, Oklahoma City, New York, they're top 4 teams in their conference. Golden State, Orlando, Miami, those are all teams that are really solid and like they're still above 500, but they're still floating around that 7-8 seed play-in spot in their conferences. But they're still good. And so I would be surprised if Washington won any of those games. And if they lose them all, even better, that's a ties a franchise record 16-game losing streak, which could be snapped against the Utah Jazz in Utah. I believe the Wizards throughout the rebuild have had 3 16-game losing streaks, and they had one a ways back. So they have 4 16-game losing streaks in franchise history. They've never been able to go above 16. It'll be pretty funny if at Utah is the one that maybe they break the streak. Maybe it ends there if they beat the Jazz. But again, it's a gauntlet coming up. They've lost 8 going in. They are probably going to lose 8 in this one, and we'll sort of see where they're at after that. But they're in a really good spot tanking wise. They have Trae Young finally playing and playing really well at that. Trey Johnson's finding his stride and his shot, and that's all thanks to him, but also I think thanks to playing alongside an actual point guard in Trae Young. While Riley is still ascending, Alex Sarr's finally back from injury, and the Wizards, like I mentioned, are in a really good spot tanking-wise. So I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Wizards fall 138 to 118. They are 16-47 and losers of 8 straight games. I'll be back Tuesday night to recap Washington's game against the Miami Heat. Thanks for listening as always. Go Wiz.